Weissman Peace Hour, presenting a variety entertainment directed by Rudy Valley.
Valley and Company. Among those included by and company this evening is Mr. Bert Lytell, known to all of you as a stage and screen star, and known to everyone concerned with this program as a most pleasant, gracious gentleman. You'll hear Mr. Lytell later as Prince Sirke in Death Takes a Holiday. In order that you may meet him somewhat more personally, backstage and out of character, so to speak, I'm going to ask him to tell you now about our other guest tonight, Mr. Lytell.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Every actor, I suppose, harbors in his secret soul a burning desire to make curtain speeches. For years, I've had this desire suppressed by a stern generation of managers. And so, Mr. Valley, for this relief, much thanks. As deputy master of ceremonies now, I take real pleasure in announcing the presence in the wings of these charming people. Willie and Eugene Howard, my own favorite clowns. The Hertz Brothers, an instrumental novelty team discovered recently by Mr. Valley. A certain Professor Phineas A. Sylvester, who, unless I've been misinformed, will lecture on the subject fish and how to know them. Miss Gilda Gray, singing and dancing star of a notable series of Ziegfeld reviews. With Lou Alter, composer of Manhattan Serenade, at the piano. And awaiting now Mr. Valley's signal to begin, the Connecticut Yankee.
On fish and how to know them. Professor Sylvester is personally acquainted with more fish than any other scientist now living. In fact, at last reports, he was leading Dr. William Beebe by two herrings and a flounder. If you want to know about fish, this is your big chance.
Thank you, my dear people. Thank you on behalf of myself and all the dear fishes. Please accept my apologies for this rather unconventional attire, but I was so busy with my underseas adventures that I did not have time to put on my trousers, as is my wont. Now, you see, my friends and pupils, I love fish, and I think I may say, without fear of contradiction or boasting, the fish love me. Particularly mackerel and scrod and certain types of guppies, is such their being. Now, I want you to become friends with the fishes. I heard one of my pupils in the class the other day refer to a fellow pupil as a poor fish. This was wrong. We should make friends of the fishes, not sport of them. And I want you to listen closely so that you too may become friends with the little wayfarers of the waterways, as I call them. Now,
As for myself, I first turned to my home bathtub. And here I placed two small goldfishes. At that time, the country, of course, had not gone off the gold standard. And I held my head and breath under the water. However, the slight tincture of soap, ever present in home waters, caused me to bat my eyes, and this, of course, made the fish know that I was not one of them. So, I abandoned my bathtub and turned to a little pool located at no great distance from my own home. And here it was that I invented my now-celebrated Sylvester Home Aid diving bell. And now, in case none of you have pads or pencils on your person, if you'll send me your address, I will be glad to send you the formula. First, I take an oversized goldfish bowl. Holding this above my head in my right hand, I reach behind my head with my left hand, drawing my ears close to my skull. Then I gently lower the goldfish bowl over my head, allowing my nose to get inside and extracting the right thumb. My ears I have allowed to expand inside the bowl. Now, I take an old hot water bottle, if such there be, and splitting it open, I fasten the upper rim of the hot water bottle by a string around the rim of the bowl, and by a second string, I fasten the lower rim of the hot water bottle just below my Adam's apple. And now we are ready for the descent into the deep. Now, in going down into the water, you must remember to carry something heavy with you, as otherwise you are apt to come bobbing to the surface like an apple. I usually carry an 1881 edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica, which I read while waiting for something marine to happen, of course, sitting on the bottom of the ocean. Now, you may feel that your home waters are somewhat lacking in the allure, if you'll pardon the expression, the allure, which so characterizes the waters which have absorbed Dr. Beebe. However, I find that very good substitutes for the exotic foliage of the ocean and may be made, for instance, a coral I make of old ballroom gloves stuffed with concrete and tinted various opalescent hues. Sand or lace coral I make of my landlady's lace underwear, if such there be, tinted, stretched on old umbrella frames and also tinted various opalescent hues. And now, having gotten you in the mind's eye into one of my diving bells, I also, in getting under the water, you must remember to breathe. For instance, I usually turn my head to the garden hose, which I have left for the purpose of breathing. I turn my head to the right and draw in the fresh air. Then, turning my head to the left, I expel the used air. Of course, if you are left-handed, this process may be reversed. And now, you're in the mind's eye, under the water. I want you to discover, for yourselves the thousand dramas of lust and passion, of depression and plenty, enacted before your very eyes. But now, one thing more. In your waters, you may feel the fish aren't quite right. I would like to tell you a little story that I often tell my pupils. Once there was a man called Everyman. We'll call him that. Everyman. Everyman wanted a bluefish. And he hunted everywhere and ever and anon, but no bluefish could he find. Until one night he returned, footsore and weary and all wet. And imagine what was the chief dish at dinner? Bluefish. And so it goes. So the world begs. Now, just in conclusion, if any of you here tonight happen to meet me under the waves, I think you'll remember me because I always wear a white carnation. And now the class is dismissed. Thank you.
shadows fall. Why am I yearning for days that are gone? Here's the answer to it all. There's a cabin in the pines, hidden in the wildwood, wrapped in honeysuckle vines, where a mellow moon is always shining. Shining on my cabin in the pines, there's a sweetheart in the pines writing me a letter. I can read between the lines. I can see she longs for my returning to my little cabin in the pines. Whispering breeze, whisper to my love, tell her I'll come back someday. Say that I'm blue, broken-hearted too, sorry that I went away. There's a cabin in the pines, meant to be a love nest, down among the Carolines. Is it any wonder I'm so lonely, longing for my cabin in the pines? We present now Miss Gilda Gray and Mr. Louis Alton. In the summer of 1923, while I was still in college and she was a star on the Follies, Gilda Gray gave me my first New York job, playing the sax at the Rendezvous, her nightclub. Lou Alder I've known almost as long. The composer of Manhattan Serenade has been regularly represented on our dance list as his new tunes appear. Miss Gray sings for us his latest tune, Morning, Noon, and Night. Gilda Gray with Lou Alder at the piano.
Walking up and down till the weary city sleeps. Day is done until I face another sun. I'm ending the day in my blue. Morning, noon, and night, yearning for you, you. Time wasting away in my blue. Morning, noon, and night, yearning for you. And you're dancing on the grave of love. I'll stay in the rain because I'll remain the slave of love. Oh, driving me mad in my blue room. Morning, noon, and night. Yearning for you. you're dancing on the grave of love. I'll stay in the rain because I remain the slave of love. Oh, driving me mad in my blue room.
Gray was the first to sing it in New York, the immortal St. Louis Blues.
He done left the town. Feeling tomorrow just like I feel today. Feeling tomorrow just like I feel today. I'll pack my trunk and make Ma get away. Thank the wee woman a diamond ring. She'll pose that man of mine around a hurry front string. If it wasn't for powder and for sober hair, why, that man of mine, he wouldn't go so far from here. Just a St. Louis blue, just as blue as blue can be. Why, that man's got a heart like a rock has in the sea. Or else he wouldn't go so far from me. Just a St. Louis blue, just as blue as blue can be. Day's a lonely day, and our sweet romance is just a memory. But it might have been a different story if you had really cared for me. Every kiss was so divine, and I thought that you were mine, till I realized your heart was fancy free. But it might have been a different story if you had really cared for me. I look to you, love, for a happy ending like the true
love that I was intending, but a new love came along and interrupted all that was to be. Oh, I guess our love is true. I can never dream of you or a cottage meant for two or maybe three. But it might have been a different story if you had really cared for me. The starlight discovers two shadows that float. The shadows are lovers, and this is their boat. The water holds a deep philosophy, and as we gaze into the silver stream, we see reflections in the water. Just you and I, sweetheart. Each kiss becomes a ripple that circles round my heart. Reflections in the water. When summer comes again, the willows will bend and you will surrender, dear. But then, will love flow on forever, like moonlight on the streams, forever and forever, all our hopes and dreams. Be caught in the crush of rocks and the rush of streams, in the hush of dawn, will our reflections in the water be gone. Those two college boys again, Messrs. Loeb and Webster, encouraged by the success of their waltz Masquerade, are keeping up the high standard of composition with this new waltz, Reflections in the Water.
You are listening to the Fleischman's Yeast Hour, directed by Rudy Valley, who presents Professor Sylvester, Bert Lytell, Reginald Carrington, Willie and Eugene Howard, Gilda Gray, Lou Alter, and the Hertz Brothers.
On a Sunday afternoon recently, the radio in my car brought me the most delightful instrumental treat I have heard in a long time. Two brothers, a saxophonist and an accordionist, whose blending of tone and technique seems to me to be the nearest to the ultimate perfection possible. And what is more, the listener does not have to be an instrumentalist to appreciate the perfection of these two instruments, as demonstrated by Herman and Sanford Hertz, as they revive in their own arrangement Jerome Kern's Who. Thank you. As an encore, a composition particularly suited to the unusual requirements of a sax accordion duo, Dance Hangrua by Rudy Widow. Dorothy Fields wrote over a year ago, the composition which Catherine Perry sang here publicly for the first time several weeks ago, I've been wanting to likewise give my interpretation of Don't Blame Me. Coupled with it is a tune by that Indiana Hoosier, the boy of many surprises and much talent, Hoagie Carmichael. The palm for the lyric of his song goes to Johnny Mercer. They called it Lazy Bones. It's really refreshingly different.
Don't blame me. I can't help it if that doggone moon above makes me need someone like you to love. Blame your kiss as sweet as a kiss can be. Blame all your charms that melt in my arms, but don't blame me. Get your day's work done, no, not sleeping in the noonday sun. Lazy bones are sleeping in the shade. How you expect to get your cornmeal made? Never get your cornmeal made, no, sir. Sleeping in the evening shade. When taters need spraying, I bet you keep praying those bugs fall off of the vine. And when you go fishing, I bet you keep wishing those fish won't grab at your line. Lazy bones, loafing through the day, how you expect to make a dime that way? Never make a dime that way. Well, looky here, he never heard a word I say.
The brief dramatic sketch which we have chosen for tonight is a most unusual scene from a decidedly unusual play. By conventional standards, it is not what is called good radio material at all. However, in planning this program, we try occasionally to include things you are not likely to hear anywhere else. And so, by arrangement with Lee Schubert, we present Bert Lytell with Reginald Carrington in a scene from Death Takes a Holiday.
Scene, the great hall of the castle of Duke Lambert de Catalica, near the Lake of Como in Italy. Strange things have been happening this day about the castle. An automobile carrying guests of the Duke has escaped a fatal accident, miraculously. A servant, lying at death's door with a fever, has recovered, miraculously. One of the guests, a lovely girl, has been frightened by a strange, causeless shadow in the garden. Others have seen this queer shadow, have felt a cold presence in the house. At nightfall, a terrific storm engulfs the castle. Duke Lambert sits alone in the great hall, waiting, a revolver on the table before him. While he watches, a window opening on the garden moves. At the window appears a face deadly pale, cowled in black. And then...
Who's there? Who's there? Pick up, or I'll shoot. Dio, I cannot pull the trigger.
I beg you, do not be afraid.
Who are you?
I don't wonder you ask. As a caller, I suppose I am unusual, even unique.
You stand back, or I'll fire.
It's quite useless against me. Break your gun. Now pull the trigger. You see, it works now.
Who are you?
I beg your pardon. I've been so interested in my reception, I've forgotten to explain. I'm afraid it may be difficult. I think perhaps you'd better sit. No, I think over here. Your back may need support.
Is this some horrible masquerade? If it is, I...
No, strange though it may seem, this is my natural appearance. That is, to you. In justice to myself, I may say that my true appearance is much more attractive than this. Unfortunately, I can only appear to man as man imagines me to be. Do I make myself clear? Evidently not. I told you it would be difficult. I am, how may I describe it? A sort of a vagabond of space. For instance, at one moment I'm casting my shadow on the evening star and plucking some mortal on the earth by the sleeve. Do I make myself clear?
Who are you? Tell me.
I told you it would be difficult. I am, or was, until I crossed your threshold, death.
Death?
Oh, rest assured, I'm not here on my usual errand. Quite the contrary. If I were, would I be chatting with you like this? No. I would have lain beside you for an instant on your bed, or breathed on your hair as I passed by.
Then that explains...
Yes, several things. I thought your son was quite desperate tonight. If I'd been playing my proper role, I would have taken him and those charming young people in the car. Oh, regretfully, I assure you. Actually had to hold his wheels on the edge of the precipice.
You held? You saved?
Amusing, isn't it? Death in the role of a guardian angel. But I did. Now, doesn't that convince you that I have no lethal intentions?
Yes, it does, rather.
Good. Now, in a few moments, I think we shall be quite good friends. But I think perhaps that you'd better sit again. There are a few more unusual details. I am about to take a holiday. Again, that sounds incredible, doesn't it? Even to me. Just think, for the first time in history, there will be no murders. No fatal accidents. No man will even die in his bed. Not a leaf will fall, nor a star from heaven. Nothing will crumble or decay. There will be only life, then growth. Sort of a cosmic springtime. Of course, that couldn't last indefinitely, or there'd be a serious overcrowding. That could be remedied with another world war, but oh, no. That gives me too much work. I shall take just 3 days and try to crowd into them as much as possible. After that, I must go back.
But why are you doing this?
Oh, for several reasons. For one thing, I want to find out why men fear me as they do.
Don't you know?
How could I know, who have never experienced mortal sensation? What could I know of terror, who have nothing to fear? Or of pity, when I must not pity? Or of kindness, or aspiration, or love? These are merely words whose meaning I am curious to discover. In particular, I want to learn something about love. That seems to be a most potent force which makes men do quite mad things. It is the name most often on the lips of man when he comes to me. Unless he's old and worn and spent with life. Then there are other reasons. Can you conceive how weary I am of always being misunderstood? I see things that are young and gracious and fragrant, and I desire them. But if I come near, if they feel the shadow of my presence, horror steals upon their mind. Can you conceive how utterly lonely I am when there is nothing that doesn't fear me, that doesn't shrink as I draw near?
Yes, yes, of course, I...
There is something here to be known and felt. Something desirable that makes men cling to life and fear me. And I must know what it is. In short, my dear sir, I wish to lead a complete life in the course of 3 days, as your guest.
As a guest?
Oh, as a mortal. I assure you I shall be quite a man of the world.
Why, in that case, I should be most happy.
Well, that's extremely kind of you. I realize that I'm asking a great deal. Now, will it be too much to put me up for those days? Will it?
No, not in the least. I have a suite of rooms prepared for an old friend who was expected. Prince Sergei of the Talbot Alexandria.
Prince Sergei? Oh, no.
Oh, then you...
Yes, just this afternoon. Of course, I didn't know he was a friend of yours.
Then I'm not to expect...
No, I'm sorry.
Ah, well, then, poor Sergei.
A suggestion comes from that. Was the prince known to your household or to your guests?
No, none of them knew him.
Well, since I've been obliged to deprive you of a guest, it is only just that I should supply one in his case. Therefore, I will be Prince Sergei of Atalba Alexandria. On one condition, I insist that no one under this roof or no one who visits you will show repulsion or fear under pain of my instant displeasure.
I understand, Your Highness.
I will have nothing distasteful on my holiday. And if my command is violated, I shall leave here as a mortal and return as death.
I understand, Your Highness.
Forgive me if I seem severe, but I'm a little bit sensitive on that point. So, it's a bargain.
Yes, it is.
At last, I am to become mortal. I'm to feel blood in my veins, the warm blood of life. My desire shall become flesh, and my hunger will feel the fire of blood. When I hold flowers in my hands, they will not wither. And those that I love need not be afraid. Not afraid! Oh, I am beside myself. My holiday is a joke, a mad caprice that I play with life. What a sublime, what a monstrous joke. I, death, do hereby take on the world, the flesh, and the devil. Well, my friend, will we begin our interesting experiment?
Yes, but...
There seems to be some doubt in your mind. What is it?
Forgive me, but your face. All men are born with a fear of that face.
I forgot for a moment. That is one of the stupid things that is nurtured in little children, and which only the most mature minds manage to shake off. It isn't very intelligent of you, you know, to make me merely a symbol of decay. I am also life and sleep, and the fulfillment of dreams. And I'm the gateway to life that leads beyond life.
But couldn't you...
Oh, yes, I shall borrow the lamp of illusion.
Of what?
Of illusion, surely you know.
I don't quite follow.
Well, I've observed that very few mortals care to face life as it really is. They find it too stark and forbidding, like the outline of... until illusion colors it with her rosy lamp.
Oh, yes. Yes, I see.
It's rather a pity, because the truth, you know, is much more beautiful than illusion. However, time is young, and we mustn't expect too much. So I shall borrow the lamp for my holiday.
Then this will change?
Oh, my entire appearance. I am just beginning to see the possibility of this. I think your friends will find me not unattractive, thanks to my lamp. And you will find me not a poor masquerader, so expect me soon. You are to be distinguished among hosts. You are the first man who has ever entertained death and lived.
Adios. In leaving you, it grieves me to say adios. I'll be so lonely for you, only I sigh and cry my adios, adios to you. And in this heart, is memory of what used to be dear for you and me set apart. Moon watching and waiting above. Soon it will be blessing our love. Adios. For happy endings I'll return dear to you. With a love true no more to bid you adios.
Back again to our old favorite, that lovely Roomba, which paradoxically enough does not really mean goodbye, but future happiness. Thank you.
voy linda morena lejos de ti. El alma es una pena porque al partir temo que tú olvides nuestro amor. Hermosa flor, mi alma cautivaste con la fragancia de tu canto. Tú eres toda mi ilusión. Eres mi dulce canción. Adiós. Me voy linda morena, me voy de aquí. Ay, llora mi tristeza lejos de ti.
The Howard Brothers, Willie and Eugene, both members of this club. The boys have just returned to New York after 4 months' tour with the Scandals. And this is a welcome home party. In this corner, Eugene, and over there, Willie. May the best man win. Gone.
Yeah.
You know, we were worried about you.
Yes.
Why, you were almost late for this broadcast.
Mm.
Where were you?
I went to a baseball game.
A baseball game?
Yes.
You mean baseball game?
No, baseball. This was a doubleheader.
Yeah. Oh, I... Well, did you stay till the finish of the game?
No, I didn't stay till the finish.
Well, what was the score when you left?
Way up in the thousands, I think. I don't know.
Well, you should have left earlier.
I would have, but I didn't know what time it was.
Well, you have a watch, haven't
you? Yeah, I got a watch, but it's a female watch.
A female watch?
Yeah, it's always an hour late.
Well, let me see it.
Yes, sir.
Well, say, that's a pretty good watch.
Pretty good. That's a wonder watch.
A wonder watch?
Every time I look at it, I wonder what time it is.
Yeah. Well, what time is it now?
Half past.
Half past what?
I don't know. I took the hands off.
Yeah. Well, that's some watch.
I should say, sir. It's an old halloumi.
A what?
That's an antique.
Antique?
Antique.
How do you spell it?
It's an old watch.
All right. Where did you get it?
My grandmother gave me it.
Is that so?
That's been in the family for years and years and years.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, listen, Willie.
What?
You know, I make a hobby of collecting antique watches.
Is that so?
Yes. I'll give you $20 for it.
$20?
Yes.
$20. If my poor grandmother knew I sold his watch for $20, cry her eyes out.
You would? Oh, well, let her go then.
Make a third and let her cry.
Yeah, no.
Oh, give me 25 then.
No, sir. $20 or nothing.
All right, take it for nothing. Well, I'm still making a profit.
Well, how are you making a profit by giving me the watch for nothing?
Listen, I took it to the jeweler. It would cost me at least $10 I would fix. So I figure I'm saving that much.
Oh, I see. Well, say, you know, you're smarter than I thought you were.
I'm laughing to myself, I am.
Well, tell me, how is it that when you went to school, you were always at the foot of the class?
Listen, what's the difference? Foot or ahead? They teach you the same thing at both ends, don't they?
Yes. Well, I understand that you were terrible in arithmetic.
Is that so?
Yes.
What are you talking about? I'm a lightning cancellator.
A what?
Calculator. What is it? Calculator.
Oh, lightning calculator.
I'm an Einstein.
You are, eh?
Yes.
Well, I'm going to try you.
Go ahead.
All right.
Who's afraid of you?
All right, wait a minute. How much is 10 times 10? Quick.
90.
What? 90?
Yes.
Why 90?
Ain't you a friend of mine?
Yeah, what's that got to do with
it? I always knock off 10% for friends.
Yes. All right.
Yes.
Well,
sir.
Now listen, Willie.
Right.
I want you to come up to the house for dinner tomorrow.
For dinner?
Yeah, my wife is making some borscht.
Ah.
You built the fish.
That smell.
Some latkes.
Aye, aye, aye.
You know, all that stuff that you like to eat so much.
You know, I'd love to come up, but I tell you, my stomach's bothering lately. I can't do it.
Oh, well, that's too bad.
Yes.
Well, did you see the doctor?
I went to a doctor. He put me on a diet.
What sort of a diet?
Well, he says I should only the things I should eat that a 2-year-old child would eat.
Yeah, well, have you been doing it?
Sure. Today I had 2 mud pies, 3 marbles. 4 safety pins, 6 matches.
But it's all Mr. Peterson.
Oh, it's all that.
I shouldn't be a bit surprised.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't live right.
Is that so?
You eat too much and you drink too much.
Listen, partner, you got me all wrong.
What do you mean?
I'm a man with regular habits.
Oh, yes, you are.
Yes, sir.
Why, go on, you get drunk every Saturday night.
That's one of my regular habits.
You always is, eh? Well, you know, I guess we've been working all together a little too hard.
I think so.
You know, what we should do is to go up to the country and buy ourselves a nice little farm and become farmers.
Farmers?
Yes.
A couple of fine farmers we'd make. We haven't even got a daughter.
What? Well, Just the same, a couple of months up in the farm would work wonders with you.
You think so?
Oh, why, you'd come back home feeling like a newborn baby.
I'd feel like a newborn baby?
Yes.
I don't want to go.
Why not?
I wouldn't go.
Why?
What, would good beer back again? I should drink milk. Nothing good.
Now, listen, I'll tell you what we're going to do.
What?
We're going to take the family flivver.
You mean the flivver?
Yeah.
You mean the used car?
What do you mean, used car?
Used by all our relatives.
Yeah, well, all right. We're going to take the car, and we're going to drive up through Maine.
Yes.
I know a nice little place up there called Sacramento.
Now, now.
What was that?
Just an echo, ooh, from Rudy Valley, ooh.
All right. Listen, never mind that kidding about Sacarapa. A lot of smart people come from there.
Yeah, the smarter they are, the quicker they come, Rudy. No kidding, Rudy. You know, we know you come from Sacarapa, you know, and you know Dumbbell either.
Well, that's very nice of you to say that, but just the same, Sacarapa's a nice little place.
Little is right. I motored through there once.
You did?
Yes, sir. You know, when you come into town, there's a sign that says welcome. And when you leave, it says come again.
That's right.
The town is so small, welcome and come again are both on the same sign. Am I right?
Well, they have a nice little hotel there, haven't they?
Pretty good, but you know, in the hotel, I went to the washroom to wash up. There's no soap, no towels.
Well, you have a tongue, haven't you?
I got a tongue, but I'm not a cat.
Listen, stop kidding each other.
Yeah.
Now, we're going up to Sacramento. We're going to start Saturday morning.
Saturday morning?
Yes. Now, on the way up, we're going to stop at the Gottlieb.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
With that big builder?
Oh, listen. You know, they're giving a swell party up at their country home, and they've invited us.
Oh, that's fine. I'll go. Sure,
yes. Now, of course, we'll have to do something at the party.
Do something. I'll eat, and I'll drink, and I'll eat.
I mean, we'll have to do something to entertain the guests.
All right. Suppose they're calling you. What do you do?
Oh, I'm a mental telepathist.
Since when did you change your religion?
No. A mental telepathist is a man that reads people's minds. I'm a mind reader.
You're a mind reader?
I'll entertain them by reading their minds.
You're a mind reader?
Yes.
Go on.
Yes, go on.
How can it be such a thing, man?
Listen, I'll bet you $10 I can read what's on your mind right now.
You bet me $10 you can read what's on my mind?
Yes.
That's a bet.
All right.
I'll take you.
All right. You're thinking right now that you're going to divorce your wife, marry a rich old woman, get her money, and then get yourself a nice young girl.
What do you think of that guy? There's your $10.
Was I right?
You weren't right, but the idea is worth $10.
Lazy bone, sleeping in the sun. How you expect to get your day's work done? Never get your day's work done. No, sir. Sleeping in the noonday sun. Lazy bones, sleeping in the shade. How you expect to get your cornmeal made? Never get your cornmeal made, no sir. Sleeping in the evening shade.
Next week, the Fleischman G-Star brings you another unusual cast, another unusual show. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
National Broadcasting Company.